This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. It's a good Tuesday. As Kurt Warner gets ready to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, today Mike Martz is going to be with us. Mike Martz, of course, part of the architecture inside the Rams when they were in St. Louis, where Kurt Warner put it all together and took them to a Super Bowl. It didn't end well, though, in St. Louis between Warner and Martz and the city and all of that, so I have to talk to Mike Martz about that. Yesterday, Marshall Faulk was with us, and he laughed about how Martz would continually get into Kurt Warner, so we'll have Mike Martz with us today. He's up in the, is it Idaho, Eric? He's up in the, like, the Pacific Northwest somewhere. He's out of football, as far as I could see or tell.
He's doing his thing, like retired coaches just go to, I don't know, kind of far off places and do whatever retired coaches do when they
grow tomatoes,
have enough money. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
sweep the back porch.
Yeah, I don't know, raise a goat farm. I'm not sure.
How's the weather?
Yeah, but know. I mean, Idaho's a nice place to be. So
sure, I'll take Idaho. Michael Fabiano is going to be with us today. So it's Tuesday, fantasy football, and a lot of the questions that came in this week were pretty open, like what is going to happen in Denver with their running back situation and with their wide receivers, because their quarterback stuff's up in the air. What will Deshaun Watson do or don't do in Houston, and other position battles with Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, right at the NFL Network. We will have Michael Fabiano with us. Last night I was doing a whole bunch of business stuff. I kind of watched the Diamondbacks game. I saw the Martinez home run. If you didn't see the JD Martinez home run, it's one of those deals where I get it. It's Atlanta. We're all wanting to see JD Martinez do something, especially when his second at bat just went off his hand. And so when you have a guy like JD Martinez with all the hype and all the buildup and he's playing at home, this is what you want to see. You want to see moonshots. And so that's what J.D. Martinez did last night, just whacked it out of the park, and the Diamondbacks would go on to the victory and beat Atlanta by a score of 10-2. They would have 13 hits last night. Pollock would hit a home run. And Zach Greinke is now 10-0 at home. But you have J.D. Martinez out there, and perhaps that builds some confidence in him. The trade deadline is now less than a week away. I am still of the opinion, that if you can find a closer, because you guys, it just feels like the days of Greg Olson all over again, right? Or BK, or we can go back to all the closers in the history of the Diamondbacks. Rodney's going to be really good, and there's going to come this game somewhere in September, or maybe even in a playoff or something in October, where it's like, ah, that didn't just happen. I'm not crushing the guy. It's just, can you go out and find something more reliable? Now, the fans overwhelmingly, when I throw this out, get on me and say, it's Archie Bradley. Archie Bradley guy, that's the guy, Brad, that should be the closer. You don't need to go make another move. Make it Archie Bradley. I don't necessarily agree with that. I want someone who's established down the stretch. I have to have someone who's going to get after it down the stretch. So the Diamondbacks are on my mind today. Tywan Walker will throw tonight, and we'll see how he does against the Braves. The Suns and Kyrie Irving. So yesterday we brought up the Josh Jackson, Eric Bledsoe for Kyrie Irving scenario. And yesterday afternoon that started to pick up more steam. We started hearing about it on Sunday. Brian Windhorst, who's tied into the Cavaliers, addressed it last night with ESPN. He actually went out of his way to talk about what a poor defensive player Kyrie Irving is, that he doesn't play defense. But he is a superstar in terms of marketability. There's a big difference here. I don't know if you guys saw that Derrick Rose last year was asking for $120 million with the Knicks. Wanted $120 million. And Kyrie Irving is sitting out there and he may be traded. Well, Derrick Rose signed today for $2 million, a one-year minimum wage contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So the facts are Cleveland knows Kyrie is out the door. You don't sign Derrick Rose to put alongside Kyrie Irving. And so if you go back on Kyrie Irving and what he's able to do, what he's able to do statistically, forget about the flash and sizzle. A lot of you guys are into the flash and sizzle. And me, I just want to see production. Is Kyrie Irving the player he is because he's had LeBron James running around outside with him? Of course he is, to a certain extent. Let me break down some numbers here. There's some analytics that came out on Kyrie Irving overnight. Kyrie Irving's overall production falls short of some of the other focal point guards in the NBA. This is from the Washington Post today. He was ranked as the 12th best point guard per ESPN's Real Plus Minus in 2016-2017. 12th. Now, analytics, when there's games that are done, in this, I'd say, what do you think, Eric? In the last couple years, we'll sit here and we'll talk about a game the night before, and occasionally we'll bring up a plus minus. It's starting to be one of those stats that you pay attention to. And so his plus minus is not great.
It's much like, Brad, a starting pitcher's ERA is much more important and holds greater value than a starting pitcher's one-loss record. Back in the day, that might have been flipped around, but now you see pitchers that go out there, not to completely change the subject,
it's fine.
You got guys that are 4-9 with an ERA of like 3.23.
Pitched in tough luck.
That's good. Or pitched on a bad team.
Right. No, that's true. No, that's very true. So the Real Plus Minus estimates a player's on-court impact on team performance measured in net point differential per 100 offensive and defensive possessions. You got that? We're going to have a test afterwards.
Right.
Going to adjust for teammates and the opponents. He ranked 34th in 2013-14, the season before LeBron was not with Cleveland. 34th. His overall value above replacement. They call that the VORP. We have the WAR over in baseball. We have the VORP here with Kyrie Irving. Value above a replacement player is 2.9. That's ranked 14th among NBA all guards qualifying for the scoring title last season. To give you an idea of where Kyrie finished, Chris Paul was 1, Steph Curry was 2, Russell Westbrook was 3, all proving they can be the star of the show. He came in ranked 14th. He ranked 9th in VORP at the position minimum of 5,000 minutes played during his 3 seasons in the NBA. Now, in 2016-17, he did set career highs in points per possessions, 35.9 points per possessions, an effective field goal percentage. He shot 53.5%, while he was also one of the league's most efficient scorers from point guard percentage and stats tossed in, producing more than a point per possession. So I'd be going on and on here on this. The facts are he shot the ball pretty darn well. But again, he had LeBron James playing alongside of him. Here's the big overriding question here. Does Kyrie Irving have to have another superstar alongside of him in order to be Kyrie Irving? Or is he nothing more than just a nice guard if you bring him to Phoenix? Okay. Very fair question statistically to ask. And you know, on the surface, oh, bring Kyrie here. I'm going to go buy his gear. I'm going to put on a jersey in the team shop. Most everybody doesn't care about points and VORPs and all that. All we care about is Kyrie's in Phoenix. No, you have to dig a little bit deeper than that. It's like this. If Eric Bledsoe goes to Cleveland, I'm guessing, I could be wrong here, I'm guessing if Derrick Rose plays with LeBron James on the floor this year and Eric Bledsoe is part of this deal, their numbers might be better. Who knew? Stunning, right? So you could take numbers a whole lot of different ways on this deal. That's not to say that there isn't a star player already here. We like to make guys star players before they're ready. However, I think Devin Booker is a breakout star, not because he scored 70 against Boston. It's not what it's about, because I see the consistency factor in Devin Booker. Now, because he is not a great defensive player in terms of Kyrie Irving, what does that do if you're Coach Watson and you're putting this team out on the floor? The versatility of Kyrie Irving, I think you would have to look at and admire as well if he were to come here. He's a great ball handler during the pick and roll. Do the Suns have great pick and roll players? To this point, I would say no. Don't give me Marquese Chris and his ability to dunk. I would give you Marquese Chris and his ability to get in foul trouble, and he's still just a kid. You know, we get all wound up about potential. Yeah, could Dragan Bender potentially be really good on the pick and roll? Potentially. Could he be Dirk from the outside, as some like to go on and on? We can't part with these young players. Yes, you can. Would I trade Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe today for Kyrie Irving? No. I would not give up on Josh Jackson's talents and abilities. Do I think behind the scenes last week when the Suns held their press conference and James Jones was introduced and my line of questioning was squarely around, James, do you have the ability to procure and convince star players to come to Phoenix, whether it be free agency or through trade? And of course, I was kind of like, he's got all sorts of skills and all sorts of talent. No, he was just in the locker room with this dude. To think there's nothing there, like we haven't gone down the hall and sat with James Jones and said, hey, you think we can make something happen here? Do you think he's not involved in this process? You're kidding yourselves. That's why I was big on this move. The simple fact that they're even having conversation, I don't know if it's going to come through or not. If I had to make one of the two trades that's out there right now, if I had to trade Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler and I get back Kevin Love and some other pieces versus trading Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe for Kyrie Irving, I make the Love deal. You trade Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe for a guy that we don't know how good he's going to be without a star cast around him. And I would say this is not a star cast. This is a young cast. Where are you at on this one, E?
I'm in your camp. I would not give up on Josh Jackson.
Would you make the Love deal though?
Because
some people are over Kevin Love.
I can see both sides of that street.
I
just think the Suns need to just let the situation play itself out with these young kids. That's kind of
But
the
young kids' contracts eventually are going to come up, and they're going to say, "Get me out of here! They never brought me enough talent." Right?
Yeah, but that's down the road. I mean,
well. You can play that down the road, but if you have a shot at Kyrie Irving and you're able to get Kyrie Irving to come here and you feel as though, because you can't just make one move without looking at a big broad picture. If you feel like next year in free agency, I'm not going to go down the path of LeBron. All that's doing is chasing clicks and killing time on the air. That's not going to happen.
He's not coming here.
He's not coming here.
Let's just get that out of the way right now.
It's not happening. So stop. You don't need to write it. You don't need to go to do clickbait on LeBron James and the Suns. It's fun to do. I get this. So it's really fun. That's what sports is. No, we should not be misleading and misrepresenting.
To me, like Kyrie Irving's it's that really nice house that you want to buy. And then you get in the house and you tour the house and you do some research on the house. And the house has some issues. It looks nice on the outside and it has great curb appeal. But then when you peel back the layers a little bit, just on some of the things you talked about how he needs the ball. He wants the ball. He has the ball. How's that going to fit with Devin Booker? There are a lot of things you have to take into consideration here. Yes, he's a young point guard. Yes, he's an elite talent.
He's a good three-point shooter. He's an efficient scorer.
He's offensively, he's great. Defensively, he's
a disaster.
He's a disaster. So,
Do you give up Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe for a disaster?
No, I don't.
I can see the tantalization.
Of course.
Wow, we could have Kyrie and we could sell lots of jerseys and our TV. He's 25.
In his prime for 2 years.
He's 25. You get him now.
You'll have him for 2 years. And then he will say goodbye.
Well, yes.
Unless in those 2 years you can convince star player X and star player Y that Phoenix is where you need to be.
The heart of the matter is, does he have to have a very, very, very strong supporting cast around him in order to be a star player? You can make that argument
history
with lots of players.
Yes. Well, history says yes.
Yes, you're right. Before LeBron got there, he was just a guy. A little bit better than just a guy. I myself can see if I'm an advertiser or if I'm sitting there and I'm a television network, I want Kyrie Irving. I got to have something to sell outside of Devin Booker. If I could put a split screen of Kyrie Irving and Devin Booker coming up tonight, people are going to watch. People are going to pay tickets. Doesn't mean it's going to be any good. And how would he be on a team that's not very good? An eighth seed, let's say. All right, shifting gears. Kurt Warner's Hall of Fame ceremony is next week. Mike Martz, former Arizona State offensive coordinator, too, back in the day, and coached up Kurt. And how did that work? You know, Marshall Faulk alluded to it that Martz would wear him out, wear Warner out. And could Mike Martz see right off the bat that he had a future Hall of Famer on his hands? I'm sure he couldn't, but we'll talk to Mike Martz about that. That's next. I'm Brad Sesmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and we're brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. Appreciate their support. Sports 360 AZ, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our football show, Brad Sesmat, Football AZ, on Fox Sports Television across the Southwest, 16 airings a week. We appreciate our partnership there. Continuing to focus now on Kurt Warner going to the Hall of Fame next week in Canton. We had Marshall Faulk on yesterday. We've had Isaac Bruce on. Marshall mentioned yesterday, dropped Mike Martz's name, and I had told Eric, you know, we should try to get Mike on, of course, at Arizona State. The Sun Devil fans remember the glory days with Coach Martz, and that Mike Martz and Kurt Warner were tied together in St. Louis as part of the greatest show on turf. We've been able to find Coach Martz. He joins us now for a few minutes. Mike, it's Brad Sesmat. How are you?
Good, Brad. Appreciate you having me on.
Oh, great to hear your voice. Let's talk first, before we get into some Sun Devil stuff, about Kurt Warner going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and your first dealings with Kurt Warner in St. Louis. Did you see a future Hall of Fame quarterback?
Well, I don't know that anybody could possibly say that. We always felt like after we'd gotten to know him in minicamp and camp before even Trent Green was injured, we elevated him to number two, and there were a lot of people that questioned that, but those of us that saw him every day felt confident that he could be a solid starter in the league, even though he'd had no experience other than Europe and some of the arena stuff. So that was a bit of a leap. I think a lot of people felt, but in our mind, it was the right thing to do. But there's nobody could possibly have thought he was going to end up doing what he did.
What was the attraction of bringing him onto the roster?
Well, he tried to do everything just the way you wanted him to do it. And he was a sponge in terms of the information. Skill-wise, he had a keen sense of awareness about defense and timing. He was a quick decision and release guy, which is what we really count on. So mm-hmm. The things that we do offensively, he was a perfect fit for it. And at that point, it was just, you know, getting him under pressure and letting him play a little bit through the preseason. And, of course, it worked out that way.
We had Marshall Faulk on earlier, and he was saying, you know, Coach Martz got into Kurt and made sure that Kurt was ready to go, that you had to coach him up some. Marshall said, there's no way I thought he could play in the league when I first saw him out there, and that he caught all of us by surprise. How hard were you on Kurt Warner to get him ready to go, Coach?
I think for years afterwards, he was a little probably bruised, because I went after him pretty good in that first fall camp when we came back. We just had to know how he would be under pressure. Mm-hmm. And some situations came up. I threw him out of a drill. He didn't get the snap from the center. It wasn't his fault. I saw the ball didn't come up and hit his hands. It was clearly the center's fault. But we threw him out of the drill and blamed him for it, and on purpose, to see how he'd handle it. And chewed him out pretty good. And then after practice, as he's going off, the entire offensive line ran over to him, and he didn't bat an eye. He didn't blink. He just took full responsibility for it, and I'm sure he wasn't happy about it. But we had to know how tough he was and how strong he was, and what kind of team player he was. And, of course, he excelled at that.
When did you feel like it clicked for him? When did you say, okay, this is going to work?
Well, I think the second half of the opener, he came out in the first half and threw two or three picks, and none of those picks were his fault. They were deflected balls. One bounced off a receiver's hands. There were picks back when we're backed up. And so our defense was able to get the offense off the field without any points. And the second half he came out and was impeccable. Well, to me, when you come out of a first half where you've had those things happen to you, it's very difficult for any quarterback to play well in the second half. And it's unusual. Mm-hmm. The really great ones can do that. And obviously he did that.
Talk with Mike Martz, Kurt Warner going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Mike, how would you describe the relationship between you and Kurt, coach to player, in your time with the Rams?
Well, I think Kurt was so intense on what we were doing. It was business. It mm-hmm. was just pure business. And occasionally we went to dinner with him and Brenda, and occasionally we'd visit a little bit, but not a whole lot. There was just our whole being was around football, and there wasn't any time for anything else, and he, like I said, he couldn't get enough of what we're doing, and studied constantly, and, you know, we went over things and over things and looked at a lot of tape. So when you're doing that, there's not a lot of time to, hey, how you doing and how's the family kind of stuff.
And how it ended with Mark Bolger, take us back through that, because reading it, being out here in Arizona, it read like it was a tough call on the organization's part. I know when I talked to Kurt and I refer to, look, you went to the Giants, the Cardinals took you off the scrap heap. He doesn't like the term scrap heap at all, which makes him the tough guy that he is. How it ended in St. Louis, can you talk about that, Mike?
Yeah, I think that, you know, talking to the guys in the front office, they felt that talking to the doctors really felt like he couldn't play with that thumb. And I had mixed feelings about that. I know he struggled with it, and I don't know that he ever really got that resolved until he started using the glove, and we weren't smart enough to realize that, obviously. So, but they owed him a $6 million signing bonus in June, and Mark was playing well, and there was just a lot of thought that it was time to move on, and that's what they did. So there's not a whole lot you can do about it now. I regret that it ended that way, because I think it could have gone on for a long time.
Yeah, and part of it's the business side, where I'm sure you have regrets throughout your coaching career. You look back on this player, that player.
Well, it's all business, you know, and the guys in the front office, it comes down to money, and obviously coaches, you like to keep them all and let them retire there, and it's just not the way it ended up.
What's your snapshot of Kurt Warner going into the Hall of Fame? What's the moment?
I think that jubilation, I think it's, I really believe he should have been a first, you know, the first opportunity should have gone in, but that's neither here nor there. But I think he has so many unique qualities that I don't know that I've ever seen another quarterback have. His sense of timing and anticipation on throws, his courageousness under fire. I've never seen a quarterback ever, I don't care who you talk about, that would stand in there and take a hit and make throws like he could do. It was just incredible.
Talk with Mike Martz. Switching gears over to Arizona State, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk to you a little bit about your time with the Sun Devils and your thoughts there and what you see out of the program nowadays, Mike.
Well, you know, when I was there, we had a group of young men and coaches. It was just a perfect time. It was just a chemistry and a blend that was going to be successful. And John Cooper, I think at the time the players resisted him. He was such a different kind of guy from Darryl that but that discipline and toughness that he brought, whether they liked it or not, is one of the main reasons why we won. So I think now the defense is in disrepair for quite some time. They've got to slow people down and stop them. You know, I know they've made some changes. I'm excited about the new coordinator. I think with the changes and what's ahead for them, I think they'll do well. I got my fingers crossed. Hopefully they can have a heck of a season.
You know, Jeff Van Rapphorst, he's a good friend, and when I see Rapper and we talk, he said he's never watched the Rose Bowl game, and I find that hard to believe myself, but you know, you look at Rapper and you talk well about Kurt Warner. You have some thoughts on Jeff?
Jeff was so much fun. I said he just cracked me up all the time. He just he was like somebody wound him up and he would never wind down. You know, you talk about a guy that he's an energizer bunny. You know, he'd come in my office at lunchtime and we'd look at film. In those days, of course, it was film, and he'd open up a can of tuna and eat a can of tuna there for lunch. You know, and he was a guy that had some terrific qualities, and I just felt like had he not injured himself, even though his height isn't what guys would like, I think he probably had a chance at the next level. But just a consummate winner. Just the energy, I think, that it was contagious with the rest of the guys in the huddle. And, you know, he's all about winning, that's for sure.
No, he's still that way today. What are you doing these days?
Well, I'm up here right now getting ready to cut some limb off some trees out here. I'm up in Idaho. We have some property in a little place up here and outside of McCall in the mountains. And so we come up from San Diego up here, and I'm retired, and I'm just kind of gotten away from football for the most part, other than some of these interviews.
You done with it for sure?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not – you just never say never. Something came up that really kind of intrigues you and would be fun to do. You know, I'd do it, but you know, there haven't been a whole lot of phone calls lately, so we'll just leave it at that, you know.
Phone calls about Kurt Warner going to the Hall of Fame. At least it keeps you active, right?
Yeah, it does. And Well, I'm excited to see that day.
Thanks for the time, Mike. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate your call. Thank you.
It's Mike Martz with us, with Kurt Warner, as we continue getting ready for the Pro Football Hall of Fame induction of Kurt Warner coming up next week. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now we turn our attention to the Hall of Famer. Welcome back, Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona. 16 airings per week. The Hall of Famer is Michael Fabiano, of course. NFL Network, the Hall of Fame there, and NFL.com. He gets it done on the fantasy football front. Lots of questions to throw Michael's way. How you doing this week?
I'm good. See, now, when you introduce me as the Hall of Famer from NFL.com, I think people are going to expect now Kurt Warner, Terrell Davis,
David Johnson someday. David Johnson someday.
I mean, yeah. We have got, yeah, he's on his way. We have got a bunch of Hall of Famers in our NFL Network stable right now. So, I'm the guy at the low end of the totem pole in terms of the Hall of Fame, but I appreciate the intro.
Yeah, well, we had the Hall of Famer Marshall Faulk yesterday from the NFL Network.
So. Oh, Marshall's a good guy. You know, literally the probably best, if not one of the two best running backs in the history of fantasy football, right alongside Tomlinson. And I get to work with both of them, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, he's terrific. All right, so I'm going to run through some questions, and then we'll get over to some far-reaching stuff, because this week in the mailbag, it is really about certain teams, but I'm going to run through some of the specific questions. So let's start in Denver. Get a lot of questions mm-hmm. about where is Michael at with the quarterback questions in Denver with Sanders and Demaryius Thomas in terms of draft rounds with the quarterback up in the air there.
Here's the good thing. I like the fact that Mike McCoy is back as the offensive coordinator. Demaryius Thomas had a lot of success when he was the OC a few years ago. Now Peyton Manning was the quarterback at that point, so it's a little bit of a different thing. I think it's a good thing for both Thomas and Sanders. With that being said, I don't know that either one of them is going to see a major increase in terms of where they finished last year. So they'll both be in the top 20. Thomas hopefully will break into the top 12. McCoy likes to use him on some screen passes where Thomas can use his strength and playmaking ability to gain extra yards. Hopefully he'll be able to do that. And we know that McCoy likes to throw the football. Thomas, at this point, I would project as a third-round pick, maybe a fourth-round pick if you're in a smaller league. As for Sanders, I feel like he's being a little underrated. I know he hasn't scored a lot of touchdowns, but he's still a 1,000-yard guy who can get you 70 to 80 catches in his sleep. So he's probably someone that I would project to be a sixth-round pick, somewhere in that neighborhood, depending on how many teams are in your league. But I wouldn't pass him up, and I've seen that happen in some drafts and some mock drafts that I've done. I still think Sanders is quite a talented wide receiver, regardless of who the quarterback's going to be. If it's Trevor Siemian, if it's Paxton Lynch, they both have at least 1 year of experience under their belt. Siemian mostly as a starter last season, but that is a definite battle for fantasy owners to watch. No question about that. And that backfield, too. C.J. Anderson, I believe, is going to be the closest thing to a featured back they have. But they did add Jamaal Charles, and it's very interesting to see what he has left after missing most of the last 2 years with knee problems.
Talking with the Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano, Corey Davis, a lot of questions about him. Specifically, the Titans don't throw the ball a whole heck of a lot. Is that going to change? You have Delaney Walker there. Can you make sense out of where do you see Corey Davis?
Davis is probably going to end up going in the eighth or ninth round, somewhere in that area. He may have gone a little bit higher before the Titans added Eric Decker. I mean, that team is set up for Marcus Mariota to explode. And Mariota is a quarterback that I see as this year's Matt Ryan.
Wow.
Last year, he had a stretch where he was tremendous. This year, he's got better weapons. You mentioned Delaney Walker. You mentioned Corey Davis, Decker. Rashard Matthews is in the mix there, too. And, of course, he's also got a pretty darn good running game with DeMarco Murray behind him. So Mariota would be a player that I feel could break into the top five among quarterbacks. It's going to be hard to break into the top three or four because, of course, you've got Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck, Andrew Brees and Tom Brady. But Mariota could be right behind those guys. So as for Davis, I draft him as a wide receiver four. Most upside, clearly, of any wide receiver in Tennessee. Suddenly, there's a lot of mouths to feed when at this time last year we were talking about Tajae Sharpe potentially being a sleeper. Now he's fifth or sixth in terms of the potential target share there in that passing game.
Getting a lot of questions about your view with the Texans and Deshaun Watson and strategy.
So if I were the head coach and I also played fantasy football, I would start Watson.
Yeah.
Okay. I love his skills as a runner. And we have talked about this a million times. When you're a quarterback who can run with the football, you have an added aspect of value in fantasy football. Now, with that being said, Tom Savage is more likely to be the starter once the season opens. The good news there is that if you look at Nuke Hopkins' numbers, when Savage played the majority of the snaps over the last three games of 2016, Nuke's targets were up, his receptions were up, his yardage was up. That was a major issue with Brock Osweiler under center. So I would not, though, be surprised if Watson made significant starts as a rookie, and if he does, I think he could end up being a guy you pick up off the waiver wire and utilizing, maybe not every week, but based on the matchups and potentially as a DFS play, because again, the ability to run with the football as a quarterback can never be overstated in terms of how valuable it is. I mean, Dak Prescott last year, extremely accurate, didn't throw for a ton of yards, but he had six rushing touchdowns. That just adds to his value. And you know, I always like to use the examples of Tim Tebow and Terrell Pryor, to guys who may have not been the best passers, but could still help your fantasy team because of what they did with their feet.
A couple other questions for you. We're talking with Michael Fabiano. The position battles that you're watching and most interested in, I'll give you just one on my end, even though I'm here in Arizona. It's Kyle Shanahan and what's going to happen with the 49ers at running back. That's just me. I'm looking at Joe Williams. I'm looking at Carlos Hyde. I'm looking at Tim Hightower. Do you have some examples that you look at and say, boy, Brad, this over the next few weeks is going to be really fascinating to see how this plays out?
There's a ton of backfields that fall into that category. You just mentioned one. I heard yesterday Greg Rosenthal from NFL Digital Media said that he had heard that there was a chance that Hyde might even be cut. I don't know how realistic that is, to be honest, but I still think Hyde's the most talented player. A lot of people are talking about Joe Williams being handpicked by Shanahan in the draft. We'll see. I still say Hyde is an RB2, but there are a ton of battles going on in backfields around the league. Kansas City's very interesting to me. People are assuming Spencer Ware will be the projected starter and be the guy, but Kareem Hunt is a good player and a good fit for Andy Reid's offense and could potentially eat in to Hunt's touches. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up starting games as a rookie. So that's a battle to watch. New England's backfield as well. Mike Gillisley looks like the heir apparent to LeGarrette Blount. I'm not saying he's going to rush for 18 touchdowns, but could he give you half of that?
Mm-hmm.
Potentially, if you look at the numbers, the Patriots like to run the ball down in the red zone, and especially in the green zone. That's where LeGarrette Blount had so much success. Seattle is another one, and we can go on forever. Eddie Lacy is the projected starter, but what has he done over the last 2 years? He's been banged up, and he's been a disappointment from a fantasy perspective, and I just don't see C.J. Procise and Thomas Rawls going away. So that could end up being a potential committee situation. Lacy, I think, has to earn that starting job, despite the fact that he got picked starter's money. There are other situations in backfields around the league that you also need to watch out for. New Orleans. Okay, Mark Ingram is likely to be the starter there, but they've got a guy named Adrian Peterson who's pretty darn good, who may be 32 years old and maybe hasn't done much to the last 3 years, but every report that you hear coming out of New Orleans in the offseason and in camp is that he looks like a monster, and he looks like he is still a running back who can make an impact in the league and in fantasy football. So that is another situation to watch. Minnesota, Cincinnati, we can talk probably for the next half an hour.
No, we can't.
About backfield situations.
We can't.
Brad, is it that horrible to talk to me for 30 minutes?
No, I would love to, but you don't have 30 minutes. You are the Hall of Famer.
I am just kidding with you. At the end of the day, there's a lot of backfield situations that fantasy owners need to be watching. Luckily, one of them is not in Arizona because David Johnson is the man by a mile in that backfield.
Before I let you go with the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, so we're going to have a little bit of fun here. Kurt Warner going into the Hall of Fame. Kurt Warner, yep. Fantasy football. I've had coaches on. I've had other Hall of Famers on. We have to address Kurt Warner's fantasy football status. Was he a Hall of Famer as a fantasy football player from your view?
To me, he was. The numbers that he put up in St. Louis were pretty ridiculous. And he was the leader of the greatest show on turf with some of the best offensive weapons that we've ever seen compiled on the same team in Marshall Faulk and Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. It was unreal. And when you think of where Kirk came from and what he became, it's quite an inspirational story. Now, when he went to New York, he had a hiccup there. Of course, Eli Manning was there. But then he comes to Arizona, and you guys all know very well
yep.
what he did with the Cardinals. He was a tremendous leader, and statistically, he was off the charts. And what he did in real terms and in fantasy terms, to me, makes him a Hall of Famer in both respects.
All right. Did you own him on any of your teams when he was here? Come on.
Oh, sure.
Come on.
I remember one year when Matt Leinart was projected to be the starter in Arizona, and I told everybody when they had Kurt's. It's a matter of time before Kurt takes that job, and that ultimately is what ended up happening. And Kurt had some very good seasons, fantasy seasons, and seasons on the gridiron. With the Cardinals.
Yeah,
he was tremendous.
In reality, it shouldn't have been in a moment of time. It should have been the time, just looking back on it. When you say a moment in time, he'll be the guy. I mean, it was clear from like day one that Matt was checked out on football. Let's just put it that way. So, even in Flagstaff.
And, you know, you got to be careful with these USC quarterbacks.
No question.
Outside of Carson Palmer. Not a lot of successful players at that position coming out of that school. But that's just one of those odd trends I like to bring up.
Yeah, that'll change next year, just so we're clear about that.
If Sam Darnold comes out,
yeah.
He looks like he's got it.
Yep.
He like when we talked about Andrew Luck at Stanford, he looks like he has it. And Darnold definitely looks like he has it. Although I don't know if he wants to have it with the New York Jets, but we'll see what happens. They may not win two games this season, but who knows if he comes out? That'll be a very interesting storyline, no doubt, in the NFL and in fantasy football.
No, this is what you get with the Michael Fabiano segment. That's why he's a Hall of Famer. He's already breaking down the 2018 fantasy scene. So you can already start looking ahead to Sam Darnold. So good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care.
There's Michael Fabiano right there at the NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona. We'll have 16 airings starting tonight. You can check it out there on FSAZ. We appreciate their partnership, and we're brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. All right. Welcome back. I'm doing some stuff off air that, to me, just sends a message that I'm completely hooked on the baseball team. So during the break, I have some other things I want to get to. During the break, I started counting the Greinke starts because they have 6 of 12 against the Cubs starting a week from today. Okay, this is where I'm at on this. I love baseball, and you start going, okay, every fifth day, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, he's going to pitch here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he's going to pitch here. And he's going to miss the Cubs both series. He'll finish the series against the Dodgers. So like when the Diamondbacks get through with Atlanta, today they're tied atop the wild card at 5.5 up, all right? But they go to St. Louis for 4. He'll pitch in that series. He'll miss the Cubs at Wrigley next week altogether. And he'll miss the Cubs when they come back here, but he'll catch the Dodgers the final game of the series. Now, me being me, the trade deadline is next week. I don't know. Eric, wouldn't you try to find a way to push Greinke back so he faces the Cubs some way? I mean, or do you look at it and say, we could face them in the postseason. We don't want Greinke to have anything against the Cubs that they can use. I don't know. You got to hold off the Cubs, right? I'm just looking at this saying, am I missing something here, guys? I'd rather him be pitching in game one against the Cubs and then pitching, what would it be? Game 2 against the Cubs, then he'd play the Cubs again and pitch in game 1 against them the following series. So when you have 6 of 12 against a team that's right on your heels, 5.5 back, I got to have my big gun out there. So
it'll be interesting summer to see how things shake out in downtown Phoenix, because we've become spoiled, but it's
we become spoiled by we are expecting the bottom to keep falling out.
Yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, in the past, it's been.
It was over by now.
It's been air out of the balloon. This year, it just seems like the balloon is getting more and more air, and let's just hope that balloon doesn't pop, because I have a feeling that the Cubs are a team, of all the teams in the wild card, if the Cubs get hot, the Diamondbacks are in big trouble.
Yeah, I don't believe in the Brewers.
I don't either.
I don't believe in the Brewers. I found myself last night, while I wasn't completely glued to the game, I was doing a bunch of other things. But when I knew that J.D. Martinez was coming up, I sat and waited and watched for his at-bat. And then when he was done, I went back and did some other things. I'm just finding myself gripped to what he's able to do. That's spoken like a true fan, I guess.
They needed someone that could hit left-handed pitching. And thankfully, he can hit left-handed pitching.
A couple other things. So Chandler police are recommending charges against former Hamilton football coach Steve Bellis. They're also recommending charges against Ken James, the principal at Hamilton. I happen to know both these men very well. And I've had a lot of questions sent in saying, are you going to address this? You haven't addressed it yet on the show today because you had Bellis in studio, so on and so forth. Until I see the police report, guys, I'm not going to go down that path. I need to see the police report. You just, in our profession, we obviously want to attract an audience. But I'm not one of those that's going to say, well, this should happen and that should happen. I have to see line by line, and I have to read through it line by line. That doesn't make for great TV or great digital or great content in some people's minds. In my mind, it's the responsible thing to do with this story. This story has just overwhelmed the Southeast Valley from the football standpoint, more importantly, the schooling standpoint. The Chandler School District went back to school yesterday. So they're all in. Hamilton's back in class. Chandler's back in class. So you have high schools ramping up. But this was the lead story last night, that Chandler police are recommending charges against Bellis and James. Until I see the police report, that's as far as I'm going to go on that. Marvin Bagley's been a kind of a thorn in my side here, because I have not been big on how he was manipulated out of Corona del Sol. The kid had no say. The dad decided, you know, his kid wasn't getting enough attention. Like, I think we all kind of knew he was going to be the number one player, and he's a really good student. And so he's on his third high school, and yeah, he's going to be the number one recruit in the nation. He's already visited Duke. So how much do I make out of Marvin Bagley is going to go visit U of A next week? Do I make something out of it? Sure. I think it's important for you, the consumer, to know that he's going to look at U of A. And he's going to visit USC at the end of this week. Do I have an idea of where he's going to go? Not really. Do I care? Not really. I like the kid. Like how he plays the game. He's really good. And he'll play in the NBA at the next level. But, man, the peeling back of the onion on that one from when he was at Corona and just what I saw when he was at Corona – it was a tough deal. I am not one of those people that can just sit there when I see greatness and ignore the nonsense that was all around him. The kid should have stayed at Corona. The kid should have enjoyed his high school, should have been involved in all of it. But instead, people wanted to, you know, send him to Hillcrest, and that didn't work out. And we're not going to be on the ESPN game. Then we're just going to leave. Come on. And then we're just going to go to another school out in California. Then we're going to have him sit out and miss time. And then we're going to threaten suits. And guess what? He's still the number one player in the country. Shocking how that went down. Like, not at all shocking. So I root for the kid. The whole process around it is just, when they do the 30 for 30 on how good of a player he is, I hope they have the people that will tell, like in high school, the circle was sitting there with video cameras yelling at him on the baseline while the game is going on and yelling at him in timeouts, because everybody saw it. Everybody saw it. So good for Sean. Hope he shows up down there. He'll be there a year and then he'll move on. And that's what the college brand's all about. DeAndre Ayton will be there for a year. He'll move on. That's what it's all about. In fact, there's a big press conference tomorrow. We told you, that was a couple months ago, that there was going to be U of A and GCU playing a doubleheader at Talking Stick. And I think it's St. John's and Texas A&M are the two teams that are coming. I could be wrong on that, but I know that two teams are going to play. I also know that Sean has said privately, I'm not going to play Dan on campus at GCU. I'm not going to do it. But I will play a talking stick. It's very smart. If we could only get a way to have the president at ASU come sit in on the meeting and say, you know, this would be really cool to have a triple header here. Not worry about losing market share to online students. You're still big bad ASU. You're missing out here on the community. Just me. And that's our show. I've had a lot to get to today. Thanks to Mike Martz, Michael Fabiano. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, Eric Sorensen, the ace behind the scenes, getting it done. Our television show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings this week. Brad Sesmat, Football AZ, Marshall Faulk will be the headliner. That is on tonight's show. Enjoy your day. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.